No great story ever started with not putting your balls on the line. The bigger the risk, the bigger reward. For us to go to $1 million, I have to literally extend my nuts, put them on the table, and then put everything on those nuts to get to $1 million. If you're playing it safe in your business, you will not get to where you want to go. Today we are talking about how we're going to take our education business to $1 million a month and what you can do and implement from what we're learning right now. Steph, how are you feeling?
Yeah, it is nerve-wracking to say that, isn't it? For a couple of reasons. I think
we don't do it.
It's a big claim.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that, you know, we're sharing it with you guys is because we want you to see the behind the scenes of what it really takes for a company to scale up. I think sometimes those parts are missed. Mm. Like people start building personal brands after they've reached the big milestones, and it's nerve-wracking to kind of say it so publicly.
Yeah, for people. We could fucking fail. And
yeah, you guys totally.
Are like, you guys are alive. We'll be like, you're still going 30 years later.
30 years later, like, we will crack it when the dollar is so low and we'll finally figure it out.
Yeah. $1 million will be like 10 bucks. We're like, we did it.
Yeah.
$1 million a month. Let's get it.
Yeah, but we are going to talk about kind of what, you know, what we're learning right now that's going into it and what our plans for growth are.
So what we're covering today specifically is like knowing your numbers, reverse engineering that to your goals, building the right team with A players and putting your motherfucking balls on the line to get a result. We're going to get into some personal updates. So we are moving to Thailand super soon, actually 8th of January. If you guys want to be at the airport to see us off, please don't do that. That would be super weird. And I'll have you and my mum crying. So that won't be good. Obviously, I've got braces in case you guys haven't known on YouTube. If not, go have a look. I've got huge holes in my teeth. It looks crazy. But I've had the braces on for 18 months. And by the time we get to Koh Samui, it'll be about 20 months. And they said 18 months, I'll be done, which they're fucking lying.
Orthodontists. They are lying.
I went and got a quote in Koh Samui for them to take over my braces. I'm assuming that I didn't have too long left. And the guy looks me in the eye and goes, yeah, another 2 years at least. And I was like, motherfucker, what am I going to have the longest braces in the world? I didn't know my teeth weren't that bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I came back to my Australian orthodontist and I was like, dude, he said 2 years in Koh Samui. What's going on here? And he was like, oh, they're just like, they don't want to overpromise type vibe. And I'm like, can someone just tell me it's the truth here? Like,
yes.
The guy in Australia said 18 months. It's been 20 months. The guy in Koh Samui is saying another 2 years. I'm like, we're really far apart on the expectations here. Like, this is crazy. So anyway, I'm a 35-year-old man next year in May, and I'm going to have braces probably until I'm 60 at this rate. Anyway,
can I ask you, had you known that it was going to take 3 years, would you still have embarked on the journey?
Yeah, I still would have done it.
Yeah, cool.
It was an absolute bitch, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's been
a journey. It has been a journey.
So currently right now, I'm not complaining, but I have wires jabbing into my, like, gums and jaw that are, like, cutting me. Like, I have to have, like, gum in my...
I don't know how you do it all the time. You're phenomenal.
Yeah.
You never complain.
It's terrible.
I'm going to talk about my personal
update.
No, well, a little bit. Yeah. I'm going to talk about something. Obviously, we're talking today about growing to $1 million a month. And you're probably hearing in our voice, like, we're pretty confident, like, to be honest. You know, it may not work out and that's cool. You know, shoot for the stars and you land among the moon, or shoot for the moon, you land among the stars or something like that.
Get caught. Okay.
Tim thought that was lame, but you get my point, right? And one of the things that you might be seeing in us is a level of certainty. And we have no reason to be certain, to be completely honest with you. There is no proof that we can do this, that we have personally mastered. We don't know how to scale up a business to $1 million a month because we have never done it. Just like I didn't know that I could scale up a business to $1 million when I was at $10,000 a month, but I did it. And what you require as somebody who is going to make a big jump like this, you know, we're currently a quarter of the way of where we want to go. And for us to make this jump, we do need a level of delusion, a level of certainty that this can happen. And the way that we have personally built certainty that this is possible for us is surrounding ourselves with people who are already doing it. Mm. When you surround yourself with people who are already at the goalpost and they are totally normalizing it, and there's lots of them, you kind of go, well, why not me? Mm. Like, why couldn't it be me? These people are no more special. These people have just mastered some skills that I have not yet mastered. So why not me? And because we're surrounding ourselves with those people who are at $1 million a month, and there are lots of them, like I said, you know, even though everyone will tell you, you know, you're going to be 0.01% of all entrepreneurs. Yeah, but we found a group of them. So now it feels more certain. And I think that if you're sitting there right now in your own business and you're maybe making $10,000 a month and you dream of getting to 30 or 40 or 50 and you're not surrounded by people who are doing that, then it's going to feel really, really hard for you to have belief that it's possible for you. There was no way that I thought that I would be able to grow a $1 million business. I don't have a degree. I didn't have rich parents. I had no fucking idea what I was doing.
I got two, babe. It's all good.
helping a lot. And one of the things that gave me that certainty was watching other people do it and being surrounded by people who were already at the $1 million mark in their business. And so I encourage you guys to join communities and to surround yourselves with people who give you certainty. There is an element of borrowed belief, but I have to remind you that if you're watching, and not just watching someone online, like you can watch someone on Instagram, but you kind of don't know whether they're lying or not. When you actually get into community and you're seeing the back end of exactly what they're doing, you're looking at their sales processes, like we're part of communities and the community that we built is successful is so transparent where everyone's sharing exactly their numbers and what's going on. And it starts to become very real and then very possible. And that belief is then given to you. But if you don't have certainty in where you're going, a set level of delusion that that's possible for you, then you're never going to get there.
Mm-mm.
So you have to see it in your mind's eye before you can hold it in your hand. And so I encourage anyone who is listening to this.
Steph, real talk. Do you believe we can do it?
Yes. Like,
are you sure?
100%.
Okay.
A little bit of doubt.
What's the doubt?
It's interesting. When I said it, yes, and then I had this kind of like gut reaction.
Well, we're not going to do it if you don't believe it.
Correct. Mm. But I do believe it because logically I believe it. Because I'm seeing people do it and we literally watched one of our friends' YouTubes the other day and I was like, I cannot believe this kid, he's like 22 and he's done it, right? Yeah. And I'm like, I can't believe this kid's done it before us. This is crazy. Like, of course we can do it. But I think there's that fear that kicks in as well. That's like, oh my God, you know, with anything like this, there's a lot of change ahead and change is something that scares me. I do get a little frightened of change sometimes, especially big amounts of change.
I love change.
And I know you do. And I think that it's not that I doubt, it's that I have fear of all the change that is going to come about in our lives in order to get there.
I love change so much. I changed into my podcast shirt. This is it. This is the same shirt all the time. You guys will notice.
The hilarious thing about Tim's wardrobe is that you actually won't notice because Tim just always looks the same.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into it. How are we going to get to $1 million a month?
First thing's about knowing your numbers, and I hate to break it to you guys, but if you want to get to a business goal and you don't know your numbers, you're not going to get there.
Mm.
And even if you did get there, you probably wouldn't know because you're not tracking. Mm. So you'd just be forever peddling and then just stressing yourself out. So getting to $1 million a month takes numbers, and I'm going to run through some key numbers that you need. Probably there's about 10 here that you guys are going to need to know. And this is all about basically just reverse calculating your goal to how many clients you need and then going down the list from there. So first thing you want to do is start out with a revenue target. Ours is $1 million a month. Then you've got average client value. Ours is $1,250 at the time of recording this. Then you're going to know how many clients you're going to need to hit $1 million a month. Ours is $800. Okay. Do I know how we're going to service 800 clients? No, that's okay. That's a problem for another day, but we know the numbers. How many leads we're going to need every month is 1,500. How many calls we're going to need 50 to show up. Our close rate, we're just going to round down and say 33%. We're going to know that we're going to need to spend between 20 and 30K a month on ads. We have a client acquisition cost and a profit margin on that. Okay. So we've dove in really deep into the numbers, but you're going to need to know your numbers if you guys want to do it.
Before we jump into any more of the questions, I want to talk about this. Those numbers mean nothing to us. And what I mean by that is like, they're just numbers on a screen.
Yeah.
We don't make meaning from those. Like, you might be listening to that being like, oh my God, I couldn't book 50 sales calls a week. Oh my God, I couldn't service 800 clients. Oh my God, I couldn't do that. You're creating meaning from the numbers. Like, we just see those numbers and we're like, cool, well, I guess we'll figure it out. Like, literally, we're just like, we don't know how yet. I don't know how.
Yeah, we don't have the how.
I don't have the how. We're going to figure out the how. But that's the goal, right? Yeah. And it's the same with money. If you're trying to get to a $50,000 a month or $1 million per year business, you have to just know the numbers. You don't have to know the how. The how unfolds every time you take a new step. You don't have to know the how. So those numbers may seem crazy to you, but they mean nothing to us. Like, we're just going to figure it out and have a go and have fun while we do it.
Yeah. So I just want you guys to DM us numbers on Instagram, either of our accounts, and I'll send you the full successful sales and marketing economics breakdown. And I'll go through all of these numbers and about 20 more. So you guys can just see what you guys have to aim for if you want to hit $1 million a month.
Yeah. And you can see kind of what we're running on the back end as well. It's a little peek behind the curtain on how we ran our business and our numbers. Operate.
Steph, when did you first realize how important it was to track your numbers? You're the numbers gal.
Oh,
you're
gosh.
Still really good at adding.
Yeah. Not good
adding
at
adding together in math.
Not good at adding.
Math with the double F.
Yeah. Not good at math.
Think of AI.
My first business, I had an events business. And as you can imagine, with an events business, there's a lot of real costs that go into, like, when I say real costs, I mean, like, every business has real costs, but online businesses have less real costs than real businesses in, you know, brick and mortar. So, you know, I had rent, I had, you know, I had onshore staff members, I had furniture and equipment and petrol and, you know, like all the stuff that goes into running an events company. I didn't know what I was doing. I had an avoidance of looking at my numbers because my dad went bankrupt and I've been terrified of money pretty much ever since until about the last 12 months.
Last 2 weeks.
Really, it's been like the last 6 months. But yeah, so I just didn't look. And all I saw and all I chose to see when I looked into zero was the revenue.
Mm.
And that was going up. And so I was
things are good.
Happy days. This is good news. We're rich. I can't believe I'm making this much money. This is insane. I can't believe that this month we made $30,000. Like, I'm so rich. We should definitely buy a Porsche.
Yeah.
Bought a Porsche. Sold it later.
Yeah.
And the reason that that is a problem is because 6 months down the line, I was like, Tim, we're making all this money, but I can't afford to pay my tax bill. And he was like, well, let's really look into your P&L and just make sure that, you know, you have as much money as you think you have. And I didn't. I was losing every month because I was paying staff too much. I was paying too much in rent. I had no structure. I was paying team members for work that they weren't doing because they weren't full enough to do all of the work. It was just crazy. It was like all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that until I started looking at my numbers. And that was a really, I had to put a lot of people off. I had to fire two people on that day and that really sucked. And I had to restructure the business. And I learned that day that if you don't track your numbers, the thing that you are most scared of, which is going backwards, 100% happens. Like by not tracking your numbers, you actually create and eventuate the thing that you are trying to avoid by looking at your numbers, which is failure. Mm-hmm. It is 100% guaranteed.
Yeah.
What's the metric that business owners most ignore that kills their profit?
I'm going to say team members taking the piss. It's not a metric, but you can get some really good A's and like A players, B players, C players, and they won't take the piss. But as soon as you get someone that's like their productivity and their output sucks for how much you're paying them, your business will start to decline and they just can't produce the amount of work that they're actually paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just paying out of the nose on a team member who you probably don't have the balls to replace and you know is not good enough. And especially like this happens in small business in Australia, like you just hire some really shitty workers who are like super entitled and want to get paid a heap of money and they just do fuck all for the company.
Yep.
And you're just paying out of the ass for like staff and it's just not a good thing. So you really need to like be aware of the outputs that people produce. Along with that one is for the service that you provide, it has to be profitable. So you really need to know if like someone's paying you $1,000 to do something, like, are you making at least $500 profit on it? Like
you should be looking at 50. Guys, if anyone just needs some round numbers, you should be making 50% profit on all your services as an absolute minimum. And that will cover you for tax, and that will cover you for team, and that will cover you for your other things. But if you're not making 50% profit on the service or coaching service that you provide, like, you absolutely have to be.
Steph, how often do you think someone should be reviewing their core numbers to stay on track in business?
You should be looking at them weekly.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that you, like, this is the biggest and the most common mistake. Like, if... if we had to get all of our numbers and input, we have so many numbers, by the way. Yeah. Let's say that you are a business owner right now and you have 15 core numbers that you need to track. If I had to go and collect those 15 numbers every single week, I'll be honest, it would get done haphazardly. Like, I'd love to say that I was disciplined enough to do it, but I probably wouldn't be, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's why you shouldn't be the person collecting your numbers. Like, this is such a good VA task. Mm-hmm. Every single person that's listening to this should have a VA that goes and just pulls the number from all the different places for you. And we are recording over 30 or 40 numbers. So we have a VA that's going and collecting all of those numbers for us and then presenting them to us every Monday. We look at the data. We can see where our constraint is, what's going wrong, what we need to focus on, what needs attention. And it just allows us to logically look at our business and go, okay, unemotionally, it's very obvious that this area of our business needs our attention this week. So we're going to put all of our attention in just fixing that area of the business. So every week you should be looking at numbers.
100%.
Why do you think people, why do humans resist looking at the data when it comes to the business numbers?
So it's quite funny. Our demographic, they're either in two camps. They're like super negative about the numbers, or they're in absolute dreamland, and they think they're way better than they are, which is crazy. And I think that comes from not looking at the actual data. I think a lot of people don't want the sobering realization of like how far off the boil they are according to the data.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't look at it, and they just have like a massive avoidance, and then they just spin their wheels for months and years on end, and then they just never really get anywhere. So like, it has to be common practice for you guys listening to this podcast, like, to look at your data every Monday. Mm. Like, it's an absolute no-brainer. I can laugh about the amount of people, like, and I'm laughing at like how uncomfortable it is for them when they have the sobering realization about how far off their business is because they've been avoiding looking at the numbers.
And I think, like, not, and again, coming back to the whole numbers don't mean anything thing, is like, if you look at your numbers and you have a sobering realization that you're off track, that's cool, because now you can fix it.
Yeah.
If the emotional buy-in is the thing that's going to spiral you backwards for weeks and months. So yeah. Don't like look at your numbers and realize you're going backwards and then be like, I'm a failure.
Yeah.
I suck. And just like, the sooner that you can be like, that sucks, I'm disappointed, but now I know what I need to fix, the faster you're going to get back on track, and everything is fixable. I can promise you, we've seen way worse situations than the one you're in right now. I can promise you that you are going to be totally fine, and it's easy to get back on track.
Steph, do you want to tell us about Invo2, which is our A players?
Yeah. Look, for us to hit $1 million a month, we can't do it without having A players. And also, we just don't want to. So just to re-clarify what an A player is, like, we don't want to have a big team, Tim and I. Unfortunately, to get to $1 million a month, it is going to be bigger than we originally thought.
Yeah.
But we don't want to have this like 30 person.
Ugh.
The last thing that we want is middle management. Like, oh, yeah. Tim and I are not middle manager people. I don't want a sales manager. I don't want a marketing manager. I don't want a client success manager managing our coach and client success teams.
Yeah.
Like, we don't like middle management. We want to be deeply connected with our team. We all want to be pulling in the same direction. And for us to not have middle management, what we do require are people who don't need management.
Yeah, don't
and
need hand-holding.
They don't need hand-holding. Yeah. They're the kind of people who take initiative and do it anyway. And so for us to scale to $1 million a month without middle management and without blowing out the team to like 20 or 30 people, we need to hire people who are really good at what they do and who use their initiative and who are hungry and who are here for the right reasons. And so that's one of the things that we've been really focusing on, is getting the right team in place. Here's what that looks like to get to this point. So we would need two DM setters running 150 to 200 conversations each day. We would need two closers doing 25 calls a week and signing 8 clients each. We would need 2 to 3, probably 3 client success managers handling 25 to 30 clients. We obviously have our admin, and we would have a series of contractors as well. So we have obviously people who edit our YouTube. You know, we have Alicia and the team who do the podcast, and we have some admin support. And so we would see that there would be some contractual support outside of that team, but that's the size of the team. The core thing that makes this team model work, and that will make this team model work better than any that we've done in the past, is that everybody is heavily KPI driven, and there's no hiding. Like, you're either hitting the KPIs or you're not, and that's it. There's no hiding. There's no base wages that make people feel really safe and they get really comfortable. It's like, no. In order for everybody to win, we all have to pull our weight. And if we all pull our weight, then everybody wins. And so we've created this culture of this really cool winning environment where everyone's hungry. Everyone wants more. Everyone's excited to go to $1 million a month. No one's like, oh, I'm worried. Oh, I'm scared. Or, oh, it sounds like a lot, or doesn't believe it. They're all totally on board. And I think that matters so much. How do you find and keep A players in your business?
Yeah. So how you find A players is generally you need to pay them pretty well, and usually they're not on the market, so they'll need to be poached most of the time. So you're going to have relationships with these types of people and then offer them something usually that's pretty attractive for them to jump into. How you keep A players is you just keep your word. If you set a goal, or you set a big goal and you're essentially not going after it, they're going to find something else and leave. Usually people leave when they're disgruntled in whatever the role that is, because they can't see that there is progression in the role, whether that be financial, whether that be time, whether that be in enjoyment and fulfillment in the role.
Yeah.
Generally, like, finding someone great, they're not really going to be looking for work, because they already have work, because all the A players have been found. So you're going to have to usually poach them, which is quite hard to do. If you guys are listening to this right now and you're like, all right, these guys sound like the kind of guys I want to work with and get coaching from and mentorship, go over to our website, makemoreprofit.com, click on apply to work with us and book a scale session. We would love to extend the opportunity to work with you guys and just see how it would be to work together. If you have goals of growing to 50K a month, 100K a month, whatever that is, we can certainly help you do that. Steph, what is the difference between an average team member and a great one? Like, what does that actually look like? How will you know?
I shouldn't have to ask you twice.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing for me personally to know between an average and a great person. If I've asked you once to do something, I shouldn't have to follow you up and ask you whether it's done. You should be coming to me on the due date of that thing or prior or letting me know that you can't get there for whatever reason. But like, I shouldn't have to ask you twice for something. So anytime, that's a big red flag for me if I'm having to follow you up on things that you said that you would do. We just have a culture of following through. Like our biggest value inside Success School with our clients, with our company, with our team members is honesty and transparency. And part of that is innate integrity. It's if I say that I'm going to do it, then I'm going to do it. And if for whatever reason, Tim and I let the team down because we don't follow through on something that we said that we were going to do, or we make a mistake and the metric isn't hit for whatever reason, let's say we just didn't optimize the marketing properly and we said that we were going to get a ton of leads and we didn't. We own the mistake and we don't hide from it. We encourage our team members to do that too. And so because we lead with so much integrity, we attract people and we make sure that the people that we attract have that level of integrity too. So if you say you're going to do something and it doesn't get to me, then I'm going to be very frustrated with you. And secondly, if you lie, like any lie at all ever, even a white lie, like, oh, I can't make it today because I've got, you know, this on. And I find out that wasn't on, big issues. Like transparency, honesty, integrity are above all else. We can train you, but I can't handle that personally. So I think that the biggest difference between average and great is going to be different for each person based on their company. But for us, it's truly a values fit. I don't know if you've got anything else to add.
No, just getting it done. I think like coming to us with solutions instead of problems. So a lot of like, okay, team members will come to you and say, hey, this is a problem. And then like great team members will come to you and say, hey, here's the problem. Here's a solution. This is what I'm going to execute. So I think that's how you know you've got like a big difference between.
Tim, how do you handle underperformers who can't keep up? And I love your management style because you do it with everybody. Like we have a real estate agent who's selling our house right now. And if Tim's slightly disappointed with the output of work or the expectations aren't being met, Tim is never backwards about coming forwards. It's never rude, but it's always honest and frank. So do you just want to tell us about how you manage underperforming team members?
Yeah. I always set the standard when we hire them. So we go through KPIs and like, here's what the expectations are. And then I lead from the front in our team WhatsApp. Steph might not even know that I do this, but I post what I'm doing and the results we get in our team chat. And I do that on like 5 a.m. on Sunday morning. I do that at fucking 8 p.m. on Tuesday night. And I do that 7 days a week. So the team can see what like performance actually looks like. So I'm trying to lead from the front. If someone's not meeting the standard, I don't have like a performance meeting with someone and I'm not sitting there being like, hey, you didn't hit these three criteria and then we're going to do this full like formal performance meeting. Cause I think that's absolutely wank and like everyone hates that anyway. So I will just send them a message and be like, hey, I'm definitely needing more for this role. Here's what the expectation was and it wasn't met. Do you think we can do better? And it's usually just a series of text messages, usually like the first one. We'll get the message across and that will be the end of it. And I'll never have to escalate it from there. And most of the time it's a 3-strike policy from there. So if it's 3 strikes, obviously it's a dismissal after that. I haven't got there recently since we've changed to this, but usually like the story that Steph's alluding to is like, we were a bit disappointed with our real estate agent and I kind of let him know like pretty immediately that I was disappointed with the result of it. And the
worked out to be a bit of a miscommunication in the end and not actually on the real estate agent, but a bit of a miscommunication that we could all own responsibility for. But definitely we're not backwards about letting him know that that was the case and that we felt that way. And I think that so many people just sit on conversations that need to be had, you know, they just like don't have them, but you're so good at like holding space for those conversations.
Yeah. I think the hard conversation is the conversation you need to have. Like, and I think a lot of people shy away from it. Steph, what's the one hire that changed everything for you? Like, has there been one besides me?
Yeah. Bringing Tim into the company has been phenomenal. The most revolutionary hire of all time ever is admin.
Yeah.
Because I just hate it and I don't want to do it and I can't build landing pages and I don't want to do the graphic design for my posts and I don't want to chase fucking failed payments. So if there is shit in your business that you don't want to do, like raising invoices and reconciling zero, like I could think of, I would rather get on sales calls every day for the rest of my life than do that shit. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's about like for every individual person, but like get the admin off your plate, dude. It's such like a low value, like zero value task in your business. It's just crappy. Last but not least, to get to $1 million a month, we're talking about putting your balls on the line. Mm-hmm. Tim, take it away.
Yeah. So these can be your literal balls. These can be your metaphoric balls. These can be your lady balls. These can be whatever balls you want. But at some point, guys, if you want to get anywhere in business and that's like a big goal, a big outcome, you're going to have to fucking put your balls on the line. Okay. And that could look like investing in ads. That could be hiring us. That could be hiring fucking Tony Robbins. That could be hiring a mindset coach to fix your shit. Whatever that looks like for you guys, you're going to have to put your balls on the line, because no great story ever started with not putting your balls on the line. Okay. Mm. The bigger the risk, the bigger reward. You've heard all the cliche sayings. You've heard everything about putting your balls on the line. For us to go to $1 million, I have to literally extend my nuts, put them on the table, and then put everything on those nuts to get to $1 million. And Steph does too with her lady nuts. And I can't iterate this to you guys enough, that if you're playing it safe in your business, you will not get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
Like, there is no part of this. Let's kind of just talk to, like, what happens if you really fucking bottle it? Like, Steph, what happens if you really bottle it in business?
I had this realization about 2 years ago. We were going down for a walk near our house here in Mullaloo, WA. And I was so anxious about, I couldn't kind of put my finger on what I was anxious about. But I guess really what it came down to was this fear of failure, fear that I was going to fuck it up, that I was going to take this big swing and it wasn't going to work and I was going to end up with no money. And I really just for a second allowed myself to follow that thought path. Mm. And so we're walking along this path and I'm following this thought pattern and I'm like, well, what would happen? Well, we would lose our house. Okay, cool. So we'd lose our house. Awesome. So then what, would you just be homeless? And I was like, in my head, I was like, well, no, I would rent, obviously. Like, I would lose stuff, but I wouldn't be broke. Like, I'd be able to make money. You know what I mean? I could get a job. Like, okay, so I get a job. So then I'd be able to pay rent. Okay, cool. And do you think that, like, Tim would leave you? Like, of course not. Like, Tim's not going to leave me. Like,
I was with you when you were broke.
Correct. Yeah. We were with each other when we were broke. We love each other no matter what. Okay. Would anyone die? No one would die. No one is losing limbs. No one would die. No one's getting a disease. So what are you actually scared of? And I realized that the only thing that I was scared of, the only death that would occur, was a death to my ego.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing else to fear. People go bankrupt all the time. My parents went bankrupt when I was little and we lived fine. Like, maybe it wasn't glamorous and maybe it wasn't nice and maybe it was really hard for my parents, but like, it wasn't like I went without. Like, I still went to school. I still had school uniforms. I still got fed. Nothing was bad. We had a lot of love in our house, you know? And so if that's the worst case scenario, and bankruptcy now is only 3 years, if that's the worst case scenario,
it's almost encouraged.
Yeah, it's almost like they're encouraging it. Yeah. If that's your worst case scenario, it's just really not that bad. And I think that when we're experiencing this fear of failure, this fear of death, which is the thing that we're experiencing, like, it's a fear of death, right? It's your ego trying not to die. It's actually, there's no real threat to your life. And I think we operate with so much fear that, you know, we're having this fight or flight response because we are running, we're going to get attacked, you know, but like, none of those things actually happen. And so when you're able to like really distill it down, one, you just would get a job and you would be able to, if you set your company up right, you'll keep your house. It's not a big deal. So then you just get a job or you just find new clients or you just start again. It's just like not that big a deal, you know?
I'm
it's just
pumped for that.
Tim loves the startup phase, And so I think like just a reminder to anybody who is having that fear of putting your nuts on the line, and usually you're not putting it all on the line. Like, I would not recommend taking your entire mortgage and putting it on Red and Facebook ads. You know, obviously you're not going to take that risk. But what we're talking about, we're taking a risk, is like, if you have $10,000 in your account and we're asking you to spend $500 on ads, you're fine. Like, you can just take that risk. Like, take the risk, you know? It's a calculated risk. But if you have the skills that we teach you in Success School and our clients take that money and they put that in, they're going to get a result and it's going to pay dividends. There is no one who is running ads well who's not making it 4, 5, 6, 10 times ROI on ads.
Yeah.
All you have to do is figure out what that risk looks like. And for us, the risk is, it's big ad spend. That's mostly it. It's hiring without knowing yet that the income is coming in.
Yeah.
It's ads that we are hoping work and we are guaranteeing will work because we're confident with ads, and knowing that even if it doesn't work, we still have cash in the bank and it's just, we're going to be okay, you know? How do you know when to take a financial risk versus holding back?
Yeah. So generally, this is not financial advice. Anything we say on this podcast
not
is
financial
for
information
and education purposes only. Please consult a professional. I'm not a professional. I'm just a guy that takes fucking huge risks. That's all it is. So How do you know, or when I, let's frame it like when I would take a risk is when you honestly have profit in the business account. So if you've got profit in the business account and nothing's really happening with it and you've paid a wage and you've got all your bills covered, then like, yeah, for sure, take a punt with it and like do some crazy stuff and see where it goes.
Yep.
I probably wouldn't risk anything that is like outside your real level of tolerance. Like, yes, let's say you have 10 or 50 or 100 or 200 or $1 million in your business account that's just sitting there as profit and nothing's happening with it and it's not getting reinvested, then maybe it's time to think about having a punt with it. I'd say that's probably like the biggest time. Steph, why do most people struggle to go in on themselves? Like all in? Like why do they?
Yeah, I think most people have doubts and limiting beliefs that they can't, it won't, blah, 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 all these sorts of things that stop them from going all in on themselves. But I challenge you, if that's you thinking this right now, like, oh my God, that's so good for Steph and Tim, but like, I just couldn't do that. I couldn't run the ads. I don't have a sales team. I can't find good people. Whatever the stuff that's come up for you today, story. That there has been a story, that a narrative that you are running that is stopping you from seeing this as possible for you right now. When you started your business, you believed in yourself enough to get it off the ground. You believed in yourself enough to quit your day job. You believed in yourself enough to go all in on the business. And somewhere along the way, you got knocked down a few times. Like, it doesn't always go to plan. Business isn't just this trajectory of constant wins and success. Like, it's up and it's down and it's up and it's down. And there's a lot of incredibly painful lessons along the journey of business. And I challenge you, if you're hearing these narratives that are coming up, to just find the version of you that started this business for a moment and lock in on that person who just knew that they wanted to help people, who just knew that there was something that they could do, that they could do it, that they could make it, that they could make it happen. And just lock back into that version of you, because that person believed they could do it enough to actually take enough action to do the thing. And the beginning is the hardest part. Like the quitting of the day job, the going in, the starting when everyone fucking doubts you, that's the hardest part. From there on out, like, you just need to re-tap into that belief almost daily of like that delusional optimism that it's all going to fucking work out. And if you keep tapping back into that delusional optimism, like, it has no choice but to continually work out. Like, it will eventually work out.
100%. You know? Of course it will work out.
I'm going to challenge you to a tricky question. What's one area of our business you're currently holding back in right now?
Still probably ad spend. Like, I'm still probably being a bit cautious with it. Like, it's still uncomfortable, like the amount we're spending at the moment on ads. So I think like we'll lock in this next conversion event. We'll have a great result. I've honestly just been a little put off by your hesitancy on the, I don't know if this pitch is going to work.
Yes.
So I'm like, oh, fuck, if she's down the pitch, I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And just some like really, really insider knowledge here. I have been studying webinars and conversion selling for the last couple of months. And for the first time ever for this next webinar that we're running, we're changing the way that we run the webinar completely in alignment with some of the people who are best at the world in it. And it's completely different to what we've run before. And I don't like change. And what we've run before produced consistent results, but not results beyond and above and beyond what we need them to be. And so something has to change, and I am hoping that I nail it, but there's a lot that could go wrong. And so I might not nail it, and we might just be throwing $15,000 at ads and not generating that on the back end. And so I'm very confident that we will sign at least one person on our conversion event, but it's scary. And so, you know, I'm nervous, Tim's nervous, and that doesn't mean that we stop doing it. Yeah. That doesn't mean that we don't do it. That just means that we go all in and we tap back into that version of us that started and that delusional optimism and just have a crack. So don't let that fear hold you back.
All right, guys. So DM us the word numbers on Instagram to grab your free copy of the Success School Sales and Marketing Economics Breakdown. If you guys are new around here, that was a certified banger. And hit the subscribe button on whatever platform you're at. We would love to keep serving you guys amazing content just like this. Until next Monday, guys, we'll see you then.
See you then.